Okay, let's get straight into it. We are dissecting that massive internet infrastructure failure from November 19th, 2025. You remember it. The day Cloudflare, the company that basically holds up a huge portion of the internet, just went dark for nearly 6 hours.
And this wasn't some sophisticated attack from the outside. That's the key thing here. It was a self-inflicted wound, and it all came from what was supposed to be a routine security enhancement.
A routine change. That's what's so wild. I mean, this disruption wasn't just an inconvenience for people. It really exposed just how dependent modern digital life, especially commerce, is on these huge centralized cloud giants.
Absolutely. When a top-tier CDN like Cloudflare stumbles, the ripple effect is just... It's global. Millions of users, millions of businesses saw their critical services just vanish into thin air.
So our mission today is to cut right through the noise. We're doing a deep dive into the excruciating technical details of the failure. How does one tiny configuration change literally break the internet? And then we're going to connect those dots to this really troubling pattern of major outages we saw across all the cloud providers in 2025. Because you really need to understand how fragile the ground beneath your business might actually be.
The scale is why it's so important. I mean, 6 hours right during peak operational time, that's just catastrophic. For any company dealing with transactions or logistics, that loss is immediate. You're talking lost revenue, reputational harm. It's the ultimate lesson in concentration risk.
Okay, so let's jump straight into the technical autopsy. Part one, the anatomy of that 6 hour failure. The disruption officially started at 11:20 UTC, but the real trigger, the actual mistake, happened about 15 minutes before that.
That's right. The timeline is everything. At 11:05 UTC, engineers push an update inside Cloudflare's ClickHouse database cluster.
And ClickHouse is what exactly? Their giant internal data warehouse.
Yeah, think of it as the brain where they analyze all their traffic, logs, security events, everything. And the intention here was good. It was just a simple permissions change to improve security for some internal queries.
And this is where it all goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This stunning technical detail. That routine change was the unintentional trigger. It accidentally changed some visibility settings. It made internal table metadata from a database they call R0.
Which should have been completely isolated, totally invisible.
It made it visible to queries that face their users.
And that is the exact moment the failure goes from a small permission mistake to a total catastrophe. A specific, very high volume query for their bot management system. You know, the thing that tells humans from bots. It ran, and it suddenly saw that newly exposed metadata.
So it just grabbed all this extra data it wasn't supposed to see.
It pulled duplicate column data. So instead of a clean, expected data set, it got this huge, redundant, messy payload.
Which did what?
Well, this corrupted data caused a critical feature file, one that dictates how bot management works, to just balloon. It swelled to twice its normal size. And here, right here, is the ultimate point of failure. That oversized, corrupted file went over the software's hard-coded limit of 200 features.
Wait, hold on. 200 features? That seems like such a random hard line in the sand. Why does going from 200 to 201 cause the whole system to just die?
Well, that hard limit was put there for a reason, for operational stability. These feature files refresh every 5 minutes all across their global network, exceeding that fixed limit. That 200-feature threshold triggered immediate system panics in their core proxy system, the one they call FL.
Okay, let's be super clear about FL, a panic in the FL proxy system. What does that actually mean for you or me trying to visit a website?
FL is the front door to Cloudflare. It handles everything, routing, caching, security. When it hits at a panic state, it's not just slowing down, it's failing. It stops processing traffic entirely. So all those 5x HTTP errors people saw, service unavailable. That was the FL system basically going into self-preservation mode because it was being fed corrupted data.
But I have to ask, if this was just a permissions update, how did it get through testing? I mean, wasn't there a breakdown somewhere in their deployment pipeline?
They admitted afterwards that their testing didn't cover this specific kind of internal metadata change. It was a blind spot. And because the database itself, ClickHouse, was working perfectly, the failure was really subtle. It was all about the interaction between the new permission and that one query. And on top of that, the diagnosis was just excruciatingly slow.
That delay feels like a whole secondary failure that just made everything so much worse.
It absolutely did. First, their own external status page went offline, so there was an information vacuum. Then, to make it worse, during the gradual rollout, the good file and the bad file were alternating across their network, so engineers were confused. They wasted precious time thinking it was a DDoS attack. They didn't actually find the corrupted file and stop it from spreading until 17.06 UTC.
Wow. And in the meantime, what was happening on the security side of things with bot management down?
It was chaos. Their newer proxy systems, the FL2s, were the ones throwing up those very visible FIBACX errors, total outage. But the older FL versions, they didn't panic entirely. Instead, they just defaulted all bot scores to zero.
So if you're a customer with a rule that says block traffic with a zero bot score,
you just started blocking your own legitimate customers.
Exactly.
So you're either down completely or your own security rules were locking out the very people you wanted to let in.
Which brings us right to part two, the domino effect. Because this problem, it didn't just stay at the traffic layer. It started to eat its way through their whole ecosystem.
It was like a cancer that spread through the system, and fast. It crippled services that businesses rely on every single day. And in a very cruel twist of irony, it took down the very systems that administrators needed to fix the problem.
Yeah, the authentication failures were just immediate.
Correct. Turnstile, which is their alternative to KEPI-THA, it failed completely.
Yeah.
So legitimate users couldn't log into sites. And internally, Cloudflare Access, their own tool, had huge errors. That meant Cloudflare's own employees couldn't even get into their critical apps. They were locked out of their own workspace.
The real kick in the teeth, though, had to be the dashboard failure. I mean, can you imagine? You're the admin, you're watching the world burn, and the one tool you need to even see what's happening is built on the very infrastructure that's failing.
It is the ultimate cascading failure loop. That was because of another service, Workers KV. It's their high-speed edge storage service. It had elevated error rates, and the Cloudflare dashboard itself runs on Workers KV. So administrators were completely blind. Zero visibility. They couldn't assess the problem, and they certainly couldn't use the control panel to try any workarounds.
And for businesses, what does that kind of administrative paralysis actually translate to financially?
The cost just compounds. First, you have the immediate quantifiable lost sales that didn't happen, transactions that failed. But then you have staff who are just sitting there unable to work. You have huge spikes in customer service calls from angry users. And then there's the long-term risk of violating your SLAs, your contracts. It's a direct result of putting all your eggs in one basket.
Which is the perfect pivot to part three, because this Cloudflare outage, it's not a one-off event. It fits into this broader and frankly really disturbing pattern we saw with all the cloud giants in 2025.
It really does. It confirms this systemic challenge. Managing these interconnected hyperscale systems is getting harder, not easier. They're so enormous and complex now that operational precision just isn't keeping up. It's these internal configuration mistakes, not outside attacks, that have become the biggest threat to keeping services online.
Let's just run through the calendar. Cloudflare was November. Go back just a few weeks before that. Microsoft.
Right. Comparison point number one, Microsoft Azure. October 29, 2025. Azure has a global outage. And the mechanism was strikingly similar. A problematic tenant change deployed in its front door CDN. One internal change disrupted Microsoft 365, Teams, and huge customers like major airlines. Again, a routine change triggers a global failure.
And then there was Amazon Web Services, the US East 1 blackout. That might have been the scariest one of the year.
Comparison point number two.
Yeah.
AWS, October 20, 2025. The US East 1 region, which hosts a massive chunk of the internet, had an astonishing 15-hour blackout.
15 hours, that's an eternity. And the cause?
DNS configuration issues, tied to DynamoDB of all things.
How does a DNS error take down DynamoDB for that long? It's supposed to be one of their most resilient services.
It just shows you how deeply interconnected everything is. DynamoDB is foundational to thousands of other AWS services like S3 and EC2. A small config error in how the network handled traffic to that one core database just cascaded. It paralyzed the whole region, took down huge apps like Snapchat and Roblox. So the takeaway is, whether it's Cloudflare's proxy rules, Azure CDN, or AWS's DNS, the common theme is configuration management failing at an exponential scale.
So when you look at how often these huge multi-hour outages happened in 2025, this isn't just bad luck. This suggests that the complexity has just outrun our ability to manage it flawlessly.
The experts are definitely sounding the alarm on this. This overdependence on a single provider creates massive systemic risk. Businesses have to start assuming that these kinds of operational missteps are now just an inherent, frequent risk of being online.
Okay, let's pivot hard to part four, building resilience. Because if we accept that these things are going to happen, What did Cloudflare promise to fix? And more importantly, what should you be doing right now?
Well, Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince, he made it very clear the failure was unacceptable. And their fixes were really centered on containment and, you know, faster mitigation.
So what were the actual concrete technical changes they outlined?
First, they're beefing up their file ingestion workflows. Basically putting in pre-checks to detect and block a malformed file like that oversized feature file before it ever gets near production. Second, and this is crucial, they're implementing global kill switches.
The ability to just turn something off fast.
Exactly. To rapidly disable a feature or push a rollback across the entire network without needing a full system restart. That's huge.
Then what about the diagnostic paralysis, being completely blind?
They committed to improving telemetry and alerting. They need to cut through the noise of all those error reports to find the root cause faster, not just the symptoms. And finally, they're reviewing their proxy failure modes to try and ensure graceful degradation.
A controlled slowdown instead of a complete crash.
Right. Better to be slow than completely offline.
So if we accept that the perfect provider doesn't exist, what are the mandatory resilience strategies for any business listening to this?
The first one is mandatory diversification. You have to move past the single vendor mindset. You have to evaluate multi-cloud or multi-CDN architectures. If your app is on AWS, maybe your authentication or your static files should be served by Azure or Google Cloud. Distribute the risk.
But that introduces its own layer of complexity and cost, right?
It does. Of course it does. It takes specialized knowledge. But that investment is nothing compared to the cost of a six-hour blackout. Second is proactive monitoring. You cannot wait for your customers to tell you your provider is down. You need systems that are constantly checking the health of your dependencies so your team gets an alert the second something looks wrong.
And finally, the planning.
Planning and testing. You have to document every critical dependency, every recovery procedure. But the fatal flaw so many people make is they don't test it. If you haven't actually run a drill to fail over to your backup system in the last 6 months, you do not have a working contingency plan. It's just a document.
And that level of design, that requires some serious expertise.
Absolutely. The complexity has just outpaced what most internal IT teams can handle. Designing and maintaining these robust multi-cloud systems requires deep, specialized knowledge. It's really why you see managed IT services becoming so essential now. They fill that gap.
So we started with a routine permissions change. A single update in a ClickHouse database that created a corrupted file, panicked a core proxy system, and locked admins out of their own dashboard. We then connected that specific failure to the wider, troubling pattern of config errors at Azure and that massive 15-hour AWS blackout.
The core lesson here is that modern operational risk, it's self-inflicted and it's amplified by scale. Resilience isn't about picking the biggest name brand. It comes from rigorous preparation, from diversification, and from being able to proactively manage that complexity.
And what's really fascinating here is, given that these systems are only going to get more complex, and that the cloud giants have proven they can't eliminate these kinds of configuration errors, should businesses just assume that the occasional multi-hour self-inflicted failure is now an unmanageable inherent risk of modern digital life, and build their entire architecture around that assumption? Something for you to mull over as you start pressure testing your own systems this week?